Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Walt Heyer. Walt was a husband, father, and a corporate executive who underwent sex change surgery as an adult at the age of 42 and lived his life pretending to be a woman for 8 years. Restored now for over 30 years, Walt uses his unique experience to help others who regret their so-called gender change and to advocate for and protect children from irreversible medical interventions. Walt has shared his story and written for The Daily Wire, USA Today, The Washington Times, as well as many others. Walt's latest book, Trans Life Survivors, offers up-to-date research and 30 representative stories from the thousands of people who have contacted him for help through his website, sexchangeregret.com. Walt's story is told in his autobiography titled A Transgender's Faith, and has been the subject of numerous documentaries. Walt and his wife of 25 years work together to share his story of redemption and message of hope throughout the world. Walt, thank you so much for coming on Venus Rising. It's a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Yeah. So for those of you that aren't familiar, or for those that are listening that aren't familiar with your story or haven't had the opportunity to read your books, do you mind starting by just talking about your story, why you thought maybe you were a woman, why you underwent sex change? Do you mind starting there?
Well, if I don't tell the story, maybe they'll buy the books.
Well, that's true too, but I'm going to encourage everyone to, can they buy your books? Let's start there.
They can go to the website and go to the bookstore, sexchangeregret.com, go to the bookstore and order the books. So there's seven of them out there, another one coming out next year.
Wonderful.
So, well, it started in 1944, and I was a cross-dressing four-year-old boy and was encouraged, affirmed, and so forth by my grandmother, who made me a purple chiffon dress, told me how cute I was, and affirmed me. And that was back in 44, Grandma kept it a secret. Don't tell your parents. This is our little secret, which actually made me feel special that it was a secret. Not knowing at 4 years old what a secret means, there's something wrong and you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was a tale that wouldn't be recognized for many years. So, but it's the consequences of the cross-dressing that I think we kind of miss on. Everybody thinks, oh, that's wonderful. The kid's, you know, living out his feelings and all that sort of stuff. And so I cross-dressed. And then when my parents did find out, about 2.5 years after the secret was broken, then my dad, because I was cross-dressing, became very fearful. You know, it's 1946, and he's a part-time police officer, industrial goods salesman. Didn't like the idea of his mother-in-law cross-dressing his boy. Probably made him a bit angry. I never had that conversation with him, but I'm sure it did. And so he started using pretty heavy discipline on me, probably in an effort to sort of man me up. I understand that. It was probably the level of what we would call abuse, but I totally forgive him. It was just probably too much for him to bear. And then his adopted brother, Uncle Fred, because of the purple dress, well, I talk about consequence, because of the purple dress, decided to sexually molest me when I was seven or 8 years old. So I think we really lose in these discussions about what consequences are. Now, we'll go back to why did I begin cross-dressing in the first place? What led me to do that? Well, my mom, when I was about 2 or 2.5, my mom never liked me. She just never wanted me. She had my brother first, and it was during the war. The war was on. Japan had declared war on the U.S. The Germans declared war on the U.S. The world was in chaos. And we were living near where war airplanes were made. And we were living through all kinds of air raid sirens and drills and things. It was just, while there was no guns going off, it was like living in war. So I think she was only 20 years old mm-hmm. when I came along. She was 18 when my brother came, and she just didn't want me. I mean, flat out. And she, at one point when I was about 2.5, I confronted her about it as an adult, but it took her until just before she died to admit that she almost killed me. And she shook me, you know, it would have been shaking baby syndrome. She just got totally angry. She had very short fuse. But what's interesting about my mom, she never did like me. She didn't like me when I was an adult. She didn't like me when I got married. She just did not like me. That was pretty clear. So I think that had a lot of, I think I was trying to escape who I was. At that point, how come no one did? If I changed to a girl, would mom like me? If I did this, would mom like me? Grandma like me? Maybe mom would like me. I don't know. Those are really speculations.
Right.
And that's all you can do with those. I don't think anybody can nail down with these. Obviously, what we know today is, and I don't know if you heard the terms before, but it's called adverse childhood experiences, or called ACEs. And so the issue of being shaken baby syndrome is the first ACE. The second ACE, in my view, is cross-dressing a boy or assisting him in cross-affirming a boy, I think, is causing the child trauma. Because I say that because what you're telling a boy when you're cross-dressing him is, as a girl, you're saying there's something wrong with you as a boy. Now, that is traumatizing. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if you back away from that and go, well, why didn't grandma get me some blue jeans or cowboy boots or, man me up. She wasn't doing that. She was saying now in her way, she was transmitting to me that I was only acceptable when I was wearing the purple dress that she made for me, which she made a purple chiffon dress for me. So those events from being shaken, dressed, hit with a hardwood floor plank and sexually abused would be sufficient to call it an adverse childhood experience before you're 10 years old. So, but nobody knew about how to deal with that. And I would say that was never gender dysphoria. I think we're caught up in these terminology. None of that was gender dysphoria. Being shaken is not gender dysphoria.
Right. It was trauma.
There's trauma. And having a grandma affirm you in a purple dress is not gender dysphoria. It's just somebody affirming you. Being mm-hmm. hit with a hardwood floor plank is not gender dysphoria. And being sexually abused is a criminal crime of sexual abuse.
Right.
So I get kind of annoyed, I guess, that we've jumped on the bandwagon that everything is gender dysphoria. You mentioned early at the start of the show, I've worked with thousands of individuals, and I have to be honest with you, in talking to them, these apparently the only people that really recognize what's going on are the detransitioners. I don't even like that term.
Right.
But the people who found their way back to sanity, many of them, vast majority of them say, I never had gender dysphoria, but they diagnosed me with gender dysphoria. Something happened, I got caught up in it because something I saw on the internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we examine these things, whether it's, internet indoctrination or whether it's a social contagion or whether it's adverse childhood experience, whatever it is, if we go back and pull the lid off of it, none of it's gender dysphoria. And I say that it's so important to kind of tie these things up instead of just saying something. Gender dysphoria, as you know, came about in 2013. In the new DSM and they admit this for only one reason. They changed it from a disorder to dysphoria. And they admit it because they wanted to eliminate the stigma of anybody having a disorder. Mm-hmm. And secondly, they knew that if they had dysphoria, that dysphoria could then lead to easy access to hormones. So it was never about improving the diagnosis or digging into the child's history to see if they had suffered adverse childhood experience. And I can tell you, in the thousands of people I've worked with, each one of them can identify the specific issue that caused them to not like who they are, and it wasn't gender dysphoria, that caused them to go through this process unnecessarily to have hormones and surgery. They were always diagnosed with gender dysphoria. If we stop diagnosing gender dysphoria and start looking at the trauma, abuse, whether it's body dysmorphia, obsessive compulsive disorder, no matter what it is, if we start diagnosing the real issues, we won't, nobody will be taking hormones or having surgery.
Right. But it seems that there's a resistance from the medical community or even from therapists to treat anything but gender dysphoria. I've spoken to a few that are outspoken and plan to in the future, but largely it seems that there is a fear for, you know, it's kids and adults are being kind of rapidly treated for gender dysphoria rather than the trauma or the ACEs that you talk about. Why do we see that? Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't think the people understand ACEs, because when I've worked with parents and therapists, more and more of them now are because it's legitimate to take a child to a trauma therapist. It's not a gender therapist. The heck with the gender therapist. Go to the trauma therapist. That is not against the law. It's not going to ruin your license. You're taking your child in for a traumatic event. You just need to identify what that traumatic event was. What's a traumatic event? One guy I just recently worked with, I asked him what happened. He said he started thinking about transitioning when he was 13 and all that. And he said, my therapist told me this, you'll like this because it's funny. he writes me and says, my therapist says I'm transgender. I did transition and I had gender dysphoria. And he said, but I want to talk to you about it. And I said, well, first off, your therapist is a quack. You've never been a transgender. You never transitioned and you probably don't have gender dysphoria. But if you work with me for a few days, we'll figure it out. And I told my wife, I said, he'll never write back, which he did. And so when we had this conversation over about 2 days, and I said, well, what happened when you were 13? He said, well, my mom was an alcoholic and used to chase my dad around the house with a butcher knife trying to murder him. Now, see, because I am brilliant, most everybody realizes I'm brilliant, I was able to identify that as trauma.
Right.
is that just like amazing? Now, right. he's got a gender therapist who's taking $250 a week for therapy. And I said, when you go back to this therapist I called a quack, tell the therapist you talked to Walt Heyer. I love that. And she'll probably throw you out. But I said, and tell her that you need a trauma therapist, not a gender therapist. And so he did that. And he writes me the day after he went to therapy. And he said, well, strangely enough, my gender therapist said she's also a trauma therapist.
Oh.
Now, wait a minute. Now, does that rattle you to the core?
Yeah, because why wasn't she seeking? Yeah.
How come we're not? See, what this is why we're in the trouble we're in, because nobody asked the questions. I never go for gender dysphoria. I always go for what caused you. This is what I always ask somebody. What caused you to not like who you are? Let's talk about that. What was the event? What was the situation? What was happening? What was the environment like? And sometimes they can't articulate it, but most of the time they can. So anyway, the therapist, so I'm a trauma therapist, tested him on the ACEs scale. He was 7 out of 10. And the therapist says, oh, okay, instead of the usual 2-hour session, it's going to be, 1-hour session, it'll be a 2-hour session. And we're going to introduce EMDR, rapid eye movement therapy. Mm-hmm. So he writes me and said, usually my therapy, and I told him also, don't go in a dress, don't wear your little red pumps, don't put on makeup, just go as a guy and into therapy. Just do it. So he was compliant, which was kind of amazing. And so he said, after the 2-hour therapy of the rapid eye movement, he wrote me a letter and he said, for the first time since I was 13, his words, not mine, I'm free.
Wow.
One session. So I think part of it was he began to recognize, see, I think we need to touch base with what we know that happened. Mm-hmm. Right? If we think we're born in the wrong body, I have a female brain, whatever. Nobody's born with a female brain. Nobody's ever been born in the wrong body. All that's nonsense. What is going on is something indoctrinated you, whether it's the internet, whether it's social contagion. It can be almost anything. But if we're adult enough to sit down and begin to examine what those things are, I'm 82 years old. I don't care what people think of me. I have had tremendous success in just reasoning with people and not using the old worn out dogged terms of gender dysphoria, transitioning and trans. There are no transgenders. Right. Nobody has ever, the fact of the matter is, in the history of mankind, nobody has ever changed their gender. That whole thing is just a total fraud. It's categorically impossible. You can change your persona. You can feminize a man. You can masculinize a woman. Those things are all possible. You can change your persona. You can change what you look at. If a female takes male hormones, she can look like a man. She's just not a man.
Right.
I look like a woman. I wasn't a woman. Those are the realities that we need to get in touch with instead of this nonsense about, oh, now I'm a woman. That's a crock. I ask some people when they write me and say, well, I'm transitioning to a woman. I say, well, why do you want to become your mom?
What do they say?
Well, it's shocking to them. Well, I never thought about it that way. Well, think about it that way, because why are you trying to become your mom? I think if we begin to introduce into the conversation some rational thinking about what we're going through, we can begin to understand that many of these things don't exist and that there's a reason for someone's behavior. And I call it disordered behavior. It's not to be rude. It's just the fact that people who think they're born in the wrong body or whatever, something happened to make them think that. I want to find out what that is so that they can dispel that notion and get on to living free like the guy did after he had the correct trauma therapy. So I just find it so helpful to not use the LGBT terminology that gets you locked in. Trauma therapy is so effective when used by someone who's skilled, and it's not abusive. It recognizes what you went through. Mm-hmm. And for many of us, we can, with the information that I'm dealing with and providing people, we can add quick resolution to what used to take a long time. They used to have to go through the surgery before they realized they didn't need it. I'm now getting people writing me saying, you know, I read your stuff. I looked at your website. I'm just not going to do this because the risks are too high. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, I've been in 23 documentary films. I'm actually going to be writing a script for a film right now called Walt. Which is probably going to have a lot of stuff in it. But it's a Christian film, which will probably turn off a lot of people because a lot of people don't like Jesus, but that's okay. That's their problem, not mine. I'm outspoken because it's effective in helping people.
Right. Well, you're in a unique situation in that you're using your own story, your own personal story to talk to folks. And so it seems like kind of the number one thing you would suggest to folks who are thinking that they have gender dysphoria is first to get legitimate trauma care.
Well, I think there's the first thing you do is tell me, I want to know what caused you to think that you're transgender. And it comes from all kinds of different things. Well, I was on the internet, I was on TikTok, I was on anime, and I joined these groups and there's five of us in a group and da da da. So sometimes it's just an indoctrination on the internet. That's not gender dysphoria, my friends. Mm-hmm. That's just a group of people. You remember the days of goth when kids all went goth? Okay, this is
my era.
Okay, but you see what I mean? The thing about goth was it wasn't destructive to the body. It didn't ruin your life. But it's the same kind of thing. It was a social contagion. Kids want to join groups. Kids want to be accepted in their peer group. And so right now, to be accepted, you almost have to identify as genderqueer, this or that or whatever. It's not healthy. It's destructive. And so I say if you're engaged in thinking that. And I've worked with 12-year-olds, 13, 14, 15-year-olds who've within 2 weeks of working with the parents and so forth have come out of it and didn't go into the surgery or whatever. I think it's just pointing out, how did you get there? What happened? What's causing you to do this? Sometimes, in one case, the child had been sexually abused. Mom didn't know it. And that was revealed on the couch when I asked mom to sit down and say, what caused you to feel this way? And the girl broke down. She was 14, said, Dad's been sexually molesting me. So that was pretty traumatic. Wow. So there are things that cause people to do this. Sometimes it's, I had one client, he's in Palm Springs. I said, God, why did you do this? And he said, I was in a family of eight and nobody knew I was there. I knew if I identified as transgender, people would focus on me. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do with gender dysphoria. I just wanted to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if I did it, I got it.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that play out even in schools where kids are left out. They're not in a great social. And then they come out as transgender. They get a parade or, a big celebration. They become important. They become popular. They become part of the in crowd. And
yes. Yeah. And the same thing happens, sadly, to parents who feel like, if they have a trans kid that they can take down to the local coffee shop and mm-hmm. talk about their trans kid, that they feel like they are smarter than you. Mm-hmm. It's almost like this cultural enlightenment that my kid's trans and yours isn't, and I'm smarter than you and you're not. So I think there's an element in some parents who want a trans kid so that they can get attention.
Well, I think that the ACEs that you bring up, their role in this is important. And I actually bring it up in the book that Jennifer and I are co-writing that follows our film, The Detransition Diaries, Saving Our Sisters. We have a book coming out and I talk about that a lot and the role and how, especially in girls, their ACEs scores are a lot higher. And like you said, anecdotally in your own experience, hit this individual 7 out of 10, So I think that I'm grateful that you brought that up on today's show.
I've written about it. In fact, a lady who's a trauma therapist put me in her book because I talk about ACEs mm-hmm. and have for a long time. So I think ACEs are the most significant factor. And I think that, to me, is the turning point in moving away from gender dysphoria. And I think if we begin to understand the significance of passing over, I'm writing a book right now myself, and it focuses on dropping the terminology gender dysphoria. I mean, we have, Sweden has now dropped they're not even following mm-hmm. WPATH anymore, right? And my therapist actually wrote the standards for WPATH. My therapist was a world-renowned, gender therapist. Mm-hmm. He wrote the standards of care, originally were the Harry Benjamin International Standards of Care that became WPATH. They're all quacks, sorry. But the fact of the matter is they all had an agenda and it was about how many people can we cut the genitals off or, what we're doing, we're destroying an entire population of children who will never be able to have kids. Boys with their genitals cut off can't produce kids. Girls with hysterectomies, breasts removed.
They will have to utilize third-party reproduction to do so, which is another huge money-making scheme.
Absolutely. And when I detransitioned over 30 years ago, the term wasn't used much, but detransitioning always included somebody who had bottom surgery because of the significant difference in a person who's going through coming back and who didn't experience bottom surgery versus the person who did mm-hmm. is so hugely significant. I mean, I work with people for up to 3 years, one individual after another, after another, after another. The people who didn't have bottom surgery, it's quite honestly very simple in comparison. It's less traumatic. I mean, you've got the Green Beret out there saying he detransitioned. He never even had any surgery. Do you know that? He still has Snoopy and the boys. He never had any of this stuff going on. And so, you know, I get crazy when they make OMD transition. Dude, you never transitioned. Right. All you did was identify as a female. He took hormones for a while. The doctor said, get off them because it's ruining your kidney. So I think there's also some really bad messaging for the people who are listening to people who say, I detransitioned, I did that. There needs to be a better discussion about the different levels. There's so many people saying they're detransitioning, they never had any surgery. Mm-hmm. And so
story is still, I would argue, still relevant, right?
Because
hormone therapy still wreaks havoc on the body.
Some of them didn't even have hormone therapy. I'm saying they just went out and identified as a female and then didn't identify as a female, had no hormones, surgery. That's my point.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think this is where I get into saying, what have you done? How much have you had? Where are you going? What is this about? So it's got a lot of layers to it. And I think what we've done, I understand there's a reason behind trying to raise the numbers that sound like so many people are detransitioning, but we really need to help people who are listening to our conversation understand what that really means and what the different levels are. And I work with all the levels. I mean, I had one guy sitting across from me in Phoenix, Arizona at a coffee shop. And I sat there and my wife was next to me and we're talking. And he says, well, I want to detransition. And I said, okay, how long have you been on hormones? Oh, I haven't taken them. How much surgery yet? None. I mean, he's got long hair like you and, you know, he's got lipstick on and all that stuff. And he's basically had nothing. I said, well, how long have you done this? Well, I've identified this way for 2 years. I work this way. They accept me, da-da-da. I said, well, if you want to detransition, I said, just get out of the chair, turn around and go over to that little department store over there, get yourself some male clothes, go next door to the haircut shop, cut your hair off, take off the makeup, and you've done it. You're finished, baby. You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
Because he never is like, you're just, he's imagining that he's a female. He's not, and he's identifying as one because he's getting something from it. There's a benefit to him because he was getting attention. He was another one that was an attention getter.
Do you see, because you work with so many folks through your organization, do you see the influx in this occurring in young women over men or not?
Yeah, I think they overstepped their bounds on women. They just, you know, women started doing it in groups. Men, you know, women are characteristically different. They do everything in groups. I mean, they're groupies. Men are kind of, really, they like doing things together. I mean, you had 4 and 5 girls go into the clinics together.
Right.
And men never do that. They're like one guy, you know, I'm not going to tell another guy, whatever. So they may line up in a line at the clinic, but they don't know anybody else in line, where the girls will go in 2, 3, 4, 5 together as a groupie kind of thing. So I think, if I were at a gender clinic and I had a group of girls come in, I'd go, wait a minute, gender dysphoria, really? Mm-hmm. Let's talk over here in this room and let's talk about how this came about before you get.
But nobody asks questions, it doesn't seem. I mean, some of the girls we talk about with our film or in our book, you know, they're prescribed testosterone immediately. They're affirmed immediately. There is no sense of questioning. And if you do question, then you're silenced or fired.
Well, that's right. And I've worked with young girls. One of them, you know, she read my book. She had went to the clinic and somebody told her she would make a really good looking man. That's why she went.
Wow.
Not because she had gender dysphoria. She said, I just want to get some hormones. They don't diagnose gender dysphoria. They just say, here's the hormones. Well, she was in the hospital. She gained 50 pounds and almost died.
Yeah.
Now she still looks a lot like a man because she took the hormones, but she's identifying as a female again, but she looks like a man, which is a disaster.
Yeah. That leads me to my next question then. You've been through this over 30 years ago. You lived to tell the tale. So why is it important for you to advocate against this medicalization? We've kind of beaten around this bush of how it's happened. the fact that we're ignoring trauma and ACEs, but why is it so critical that we, or that you advocate against this?
Yeah, well, because Sweden says, and I agree, because you're 19 times more likely to die by suicide after you transition. That's number one. Number two is your reproductive organs are incapable of doing any reproduction. The fact of the matter is that you will suffer greatly from regret at some point in your life. I have women contact me 40 years after the surgeries and saying they regretted it. It took them 20 years to admit it because their life was so badly destroyed. So the issue is my website, sexchangeregret.com, started some years ago. And I said, if nobody contacts my website, then I'll know that I'm the only one that regretted it. Mm. The problem is that I've had well over 2 million people contact my website. I have somewhere around 11,000 emails in my inbox for people asking for help. I've worked with people on and off the internet and so forth. It's a tragedy. I'm speaking out because it's tragic. And the biggest thing is not one of them needed hormones or surgery. Not one. And they admit, I'm working with a young man in California right now. He was diagnosed as gender dysphoric when he was 13. He was at the clinic in Sacramento. They diagnosed him not only with gender dysphoria, but with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and PTSD at the same time because he was sexually abused as a child. Now, that sounds like ACEs to me, but I'm just a guy, right? So this was Kaiser Permanente in California, and they continued to care for him. When he was 24, they cut his genitals off after they diagnosed him a second time with gender dysphoria, put breast implants in him, told him he was a female. That was in March of 2021. In August of 2021, he contacted me. The guy with schizophrenia, bipolar, and PTSD disorder contacted me and said, I never wanted this. Why did they do this to me? I said, why did they do what to you? He said, I never wanted to be a female. Well, the clinicians at the hospital operated on some schizophrenic one of his personalities or multiple person, whatever it was. It wasn't, you get this? I mean, this is nonsense, right? And so we have
it's tragic and sad. It's really sad. It breaks my heart.
So that's why I do it, because if we can, and I'm glad you're using the ACEs, because I believe this is the new way to help people identify why they're feeling that way. And I think that's the most important thing. And I want everybody to use ACEs. I want everybody to look at ACEs. And if the person doesn't fall into the category of ACEs, then I want you to look for something else. Find out if it's body dysmorphia. Find out if it's obsessive compulsive disorders. It's schizophrenia like Richard's. There's something going on that's causing you to not like who you are. What is it? Because it's not gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. It's never, ever been about gender. But they make money. You realize that for every child they get on hormone therapy, have you heard the numbers? I think it's $200,000 or $300,000 to the pharma companies for the medications they're going to need. So it's about money, darling. It's about money. Yeah. It isn't about helping anybody.
I think that those numbers are so hard to get. Where do you get your data?
If you write me back, I was at a conference with, I forgot her name, but she has a daughter that was struggling with it, and she started studying it. I think she said it was $300,000 or $400,000, but she's written a book on it.
I don't doubt that at all. It's so hard in writing the book. We did a lot of research and educating in our documentary, lots of research, and it's hard to find good quality information. As it is, we do a lot of work in assisted reproductive technologies in the space around third party reproduction, like surrogacy, egg donation. And those numbers too, they're hard to find. People aren't giving good quality data on it. And I do think there is a tie between not only pharma and what the surgeons are getting from kids who are transitioning. And I'm using air quotes for anyone listening, because you can't transition like we've already talked about, but then they're gaining someone else in the market and in the industry for when these children grow up and they find out that they cannot have children the traditional way, or then they're targeted from fertility clinics, and it's another way that we can make money off of these kids, yeah, and their families. And
I've written about it, and it's social Marxism when you dig down into it. I'm in a documentary film that explains about the social Marxism component of this. The idea of erasing male and female is Marxist, in that what they want is what they originally called workers. They just want everybody to be workers, fall under one category, no male, no female. They're just all workers. That's Marxist ideology. It's in the documentary film called Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda. It's a $15 film. It's a long film, but it's amazing. But it points out that this is part of a long history of Marxist agenda to eliminate male and female from society.
Hmm. So do you have hope? You've been in this
Yeah. Oh, I always have hope. Okay. Yeah. The reason why I have hope is because everybody that I have an opportunity to speak with that sort of is willing to be open-minded about it, they get the aha moment. Mm. And I've had people contact me. They had no idea why they did it. And I worked with them and go, you know, I always ask, well, why'd you do it? Mm-hmm. Tell me I don't know. You know, the person's 40 years old. They've been living this way for years. And I said, well, golly, when did all this start? And, you know, one guy said, well, I was about 12. What happened when you were 12? I mean, you just keep digging, right? You keep asking questions. Oh, not much. I was at summer camp and my diving coach started sexually molesting me. Oh, well, maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know.
So when someone contacts you through your website, say we have a listener today who's listening, or and they're interested, or they're piqued and they want to contact you, what do you provide them through your website? Is it just an email conversation?
Depends on what they ask, you know. And so I have people writing me from all over the world, because we reach about 170 countries around the world. So I'm doing communications with people 7 days a week, 365 days a year, from 5 a.m. till 9 p.m. And then in the middle of things, once in a while, I'll do a little chat on video with
like
you.
This. Thank you.
So and I do it all for free. Nobody ever pays. So that's, you know, people say, well, I can't afford you. Well, if I charge you, it's true. You wouldn't be able to afford me, but I don't charge anybody. So I just think it's whatever they ask, I answer as best I can and point them in the right direction. But typically, I always ask them, what happened to cause you to not like who you are? Right. Tell me about it. Tell me your, everybody has a story. Mm-hmm. I just want to know your story. But if you want to discover what happened, you have to be truthful with me. You can't blow smoke up my pant leg. That's not going to help either one of us. So, you know, some people will expect a great deal from me, but, and sometimes, my flippant remarks get people off, like, you're, therapist is a quack and you don't have gender dysphoria, you didn't transition. And so they can't be too sensitive if they're going to work with me, because I'm not a little fuzzball kind of everybody's going to win. I'm going to tell you the truth and you're probably sometimes not going to like it. I had one guy who wrote me for 2 or 3 years telling me, I'm going to close you down. You're an idiot. You're a wacko. You use some other words. And he said, you don't know what you're talking about. Hurry up and die, old man. And I wrote him back. He said, hey, don't worry about it. I'm 80 years old. I'm going to die pretty soon. Just be patient. And so, you know, you have to have a little sense of humor around this. Right. I don't get upset with bad emails. I want to help people, but I really do think that we need to understand the component of ACEs, and we need to understand that there is a huge agenda, George Soros, Tides Foundation, and others who are hell-bent on destroying the society. And you destroy the society and the foundation of the church by eliminating male and female family, the family unit. Mm-hmm.
I want to get back a little bit just to your own personal story, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
One question I have is, you know, it seems like the transgender ideology has really blown up in recent years. So how has, or has it even, the landscape changed from when you went through this to present day? And then also, do you have any effects now that you're still working through because of the medicalization of your body and trying to change your body from male to female?
Yeah, the whole thing blew up when they changed it from disorder to dysphoria in 2013. You look prior to that, you don't see this. This was an explosion, an intended diabolical ruinization of children, and they're targeting children. Yeah, when you cut off body parts, you've still got things to deal with. Mm-hmm. So, this is the thing. See, I think more than humanity, consequences play a much bigger role. The ripple effects in my family from what I did, it changed everybody. It didn't just change me. I destroyed many lives. I was married with two children, just like Jenner, just like HHS guy, which that Rachel Levine, are you kidding me? That should end transgenderism forever if you see that one. I mean, come on. This is really unbelievable. For this guy to be identifying as a woman, to me, is the biggest scourge on womanhood of all time. I mean, it's for a man to say, I can take hormones and have surgery and become a woman, is on itself insanity.
It's frustrating too that men are trying to take over our spaces. Just even, you probably saw it, but the makeup company that had on two men to talk about what it was like to be a woman. And it was like, how are people not outraged by this?
Well, we should be more outraged by it. And so, there's always effects. I'm glad that I'm in a position to have experienced what I experienced. I don't regret, you know, outside of the fact that the harm I did to other people with my life. I have good relationship with my children today. I didn't for many years. So I think it's just important for all of us to start using our own language and not their language. I think we suffer a great deal when we begin to use LGBT language in the midst of something that it really is harming people. And so I choose not to use their language. And I think there's just a much better way of looking at it. I think you're diving into it, and I'm glad you are.
Yeah. I think the language is really critical. And I hate that we have to kind of succumb a little bit to it because, and now I've just gotten into the fact of putting air quotes and quotes around transgender. And because like you said, you can't, but what word other than the word that's being used?
I've got the words called feminized man and masculinized women. That's
there you
it.
Go.
Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's the fact of the matter.
Yeah. And I use the same air quotes around, when we talk about egg donation, because women those eggs are purchased, they're not donated. I think language is, we've got to pay more attention to the words that we use and how we use them.
Even my Stanford University therapist, when I went many, many years ago, after going through the surgery, talked about it in terms of a persona, never used the word gender. And it wasn't until they realized that hormones had a tremendous financial benefit that they began to use the word gender. For a long time, it was about your persona. What is your persona? Mm-hmm. Personas don't suggest that you need hormone therapy and long-term care and all that. So I think persona is an accurate term. I think feminized man and masculinized women are quite accurate. I'm very comfortable with those terminologies. And I think those are terms we actually should be using.
Mm-hmm. So we talked at the beginning about ACEs and how trauma as a child can cause someone to feel like they were born in the wrong body or that they might have this dysphoria, so to speak. But do you think that, so my question is, because we're seeing so many kids getting wrapped up in this, do you think that ACEs are going up, like we're seeing more trauma, or do you think that we're just that those in big pharma, those in medicine have learned how to monopolize from it?
First off, I think we're seeing more trauma because I suggest, people will disagree, but I suggest that because I went through it, that you don't know you're being traumatized by being cross-dressed. Mm. I think it's traumatizing to cross-dress a boy and then start a firm. That's a traumatic event. You're saying you are not who you are, you're going to be somebody. That's about the core of who you are.
I see.
And so I think, yes, we're adding to the ACEs, and I think it's most unfortunate. And so until such time as we can begin to move away from, and I think every time we have a child who's been through this and say, you don't have gender dysphoria, you're not going to transition, you're dealing with a traumatic event and you need to treat it, then we can actually begin to help them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then of course the advent of technology, social media.
That's driving a lot of it because people are jumping on that. You'll find out I'm not on social media, although people, I get on videos and people put me on social media, I'm not a social media geek. I don't even like social media, to be honest with you. So I think it's kind of a garbage pit, but
it can be. Yeah. I like it in so much of, I get to connect with people. That's how I find Richie is in England. You probably know of, or Scotland actually, I think maybe. And he is, again, quote unquote, detransitioning. He had top and bottom surgery, and he tweets all the time, wonderful things. And I loved one of his things was, you know, get outside, get off the internet, get off, you know, and it's like words of wisdom to live by for everybody, not just anyone, not just of us going through any type of mental health issue. But so our time is coming to an end. I want to let you get back to answering all of your emails and taking care of everyone. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to our listeners who might be listening today? Any other words?
I just think it's important for us to realize these issues are not about gender. And the idea that taking hormones and cutting off body parts, you need to understand, are not going to be effective in helping you understand what you're dealing with. And digging in and finding out what your comorbid disorder is, whether it's ACEs, body dysmorphia, poor family environment. We need to understand something that ACEs, it says in the ACEs that ACEs, a traumatic event of any kind, whether it's the death of a father, alcoholic mother, you can go through the list. There's numerous things in there. But in what happens, it says, and this is a quote, a child's brain is changed at the level of where their identity is being formed when they suffer trauma. And so, but keep in mind, neuroplasticity. That means with proper therapy, it can be fixed. The problem is that we continue to, because they tell you, keep affirming, because they want to get you down the road to where the neuroplasticity becomes much more difficult to bring them back to where they are, which trauma therapy can do once they recognize trauma through whatever therapies are available. Then you can actually regain your identity that was destroyed by that traumatic event. And you can do it most likely before you're 18 years old, if you have proper therapy. But when you have somebody telling you you're somebody else, or you did this and you've been suffering like I did from being a mom who hated me, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and emotional abuse, and nobody's helping you get over it, you're struggling with this. I happen to have the great benefit of knowing Jesus, and Jesus came along and picked me up and dusted me off and said, no, you have a job to do, go do it.
Well, thanks for doing your job. And thanks for taking time out of your job to come talk with me. I know our listeners will enjoy this episode and enjoy hearing from you. So thank you again for coming on. Listeners, you can read and watch more about Walt on his website, www.walthyer.com. And you can find more resources that he talked about, his documentaries and books that he's written or been a part of, at sexchangeregret.com. Both of those are great places to find Walt and his work. And again, Walt, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was really was a joy. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to all of our listeners. May you continue to think beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.